Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 55, and this is September 30th, 2013. This is the show where we showcase new authors, and I am your host, Tom Riedel, and along with us shortly will be my wonderful co-host, Robin Eduardo. Brief intro to today's show. We have on Trent Sflina, wrote The Price of Power. He'll be here at quarter after the hour, wherever you are. And the Writer's Lounge blog, you can find us over at tomriedel.com/blog. And over there, you can read the reviews and listen to the shows with the Blog Talk Radio player located at the top left-hand corner of that page. Of course, we are on Facebook. Go ahead and search for the Writer's Lounge on Facebook. We are also on Twitter. And you can give us a contact at our email, which is twl11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors next time around on October 14th, P.S. Bartlett will be here with Fireflies. And once again, that's October 14th, so tune in for that. Now, Magic Pen Web Design is one of our sponsors, and they offer its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Fill out the free estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let the Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And we have more sponsors here, and we have a promotion. It's a TWL book promotion. If you want to find out more about it, go over to our Facebook page. I won't tell you about it here, but it helps to keep us running here at the Writer's Lounge, and we really appreciate it. And, of course, the promos and the ads that I will read to you now. The first book is Faceless by Dawn Whidden, who was just recently on the Writer's Lounge. Pretty teenage girl is found dead in the woods, her face horribly mutilated. A few days later, a second girl, also strikingly beautiful, is attacked in a similar fashion. Who would do such a brutal thing and why? Is there some sort of psychopathic monster lurking out there preying on vulnerable females? Were the victims targeted for some reason by someone they knew? It's up to two of Fallsburg's finest, Detective Jean Whitley and her new partner, Marty Keel, to find out who's responsible for grisly crimes. You can go over and find Faceless on Amazon.com. Also, promoting the Writer's Lounge is Storms of Deliverance by Larry Higdon. A man called Bad News Johnson seeks atonement for a life of heavy drinking and violence in his guest quest to reunite with his ex-wife and her daughter. He encounters possible time travel, possible ghosts, and storms, both real and metaphysical. Sorry about that. I'm stumbling over my words tonight. Larry Higdon has, in addition to his writing, worked as an elementary school counselor. He is a registered play therapist and a lawyer. This is his first novel. His second novel, The School from Hell, should be available soon. And purchase The Storms of Deliverance, once again, over at Amazon.com. And the third book on our first segment here, Judgment of Souls by Margarita Felicis, If you thought that all vampire stories were the same, think again. Judgment of Souls 3, Kiss at Dawn, is the first in a stunning paranormal romance gothic horror trilogy in which a naive, pure-blood vampire is tossed into the mortal world. Rachel meets Daniel, a nightclub owner, and his group of friends, and after Daniel's best friend is murdered by Max, becomes embroiled in the search for an ancient vampire artifact. Rachel tries to fight off her feelings for Daniel, even siding with her vampire friend, Aaron, to think again about Daniel's involvement, but he's her love, and she's going to protect him, no matter what. And once again, do a search for Judge of Souls over at Amazon.com. Coming up next here, Fireflies by P.S. Bartlett. However peculiar Enos Whelan has been for the first 6 years of his life, not until the day he found the bird did the degree of his strangeness become so tangible. Dr. Owen Whelan and his wife Sarah, both Irish immigrants, have been living the American dream as well as raising seven bright and expressive children. The youngest, Enos, however, has since birth been a bit of a mystery. Enos was always small, meek, and frightfully odd, but there is so much more to him than anyone could imagine. His sister, Tegan, grows increasingly suspicious of his behavior, but their mother dismisses her claims until the day he starts healing people. Once again, you can find that book, again, on your favorite search engine. And we'll have a couple more books at the end of the program. And right now, I will introduce my wonderful and lovely co-host, Robin Eduardo, all the way from New Jersey over on the Eastern Shore. I'm in the Midwest here in Minnesota. And Robin, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I love how you give our locations in case we might have stalkers. Who knows?
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, I have a co-host
out.
Or I have a guest co-host here in the studio with me, the delightfully wonderful Lisa Lee has been with us in a couple of the programs that they filled in for you, and we're glad to hear that. And so it's good to have someone live, but someday you and I will meet and maybe do a show. It'd be great to do a show where we can look at each other face to face.
By the campfire.
Yeah, with the condom.
Oh, no, wrong impression.
Oh, no,
wrong impression.
No condoms, okay.
Or is that TMI?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, well, just so people don't get the wrong idea.
He's referring to,
yeah, go ahead.
Tom's referring to Tom's referring to my ability to make fire out of condoms and water.
Yeah,
just
right.
For those who are listening, please don't get the wrong idea. I'm a bit of a survivalist, and he's just really impressed by that.
I'm very impressed. In fact, never got the chance to do that, and I'll be closing up camp here in another week. I'll be going up to winterize the old camper, well, the new camper. And it'll be sad, but it's one of those transitions that we look forward to, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Last weekend, I went up to a haunted mansion up in Duluth, Minnesota, that's kind of east of where my camp is, where all the big ships come in, and walked into that place and actually had an experience, Robin. The back of my hair was lifted up in one of the rooms. And I was really fascinated. Everybody says, were you scared? And ghost hunters don't get scared. They get excited. Because when those things happen, you want more of it to happen. Unfortunately, for me, during that time, nothing else happened. But it was a lot of fun. And Duluth is just a wonderful little town. So if you ever get a chance to get here, you should visit.
Oh, for sure. That sounds so interesting.
And speaking of ghosts and scary stuff, Robin, let's talk about, I meant to mention this in the last program when you were on, but let's talk a little bit about the program that you do on Blog Talk Radio, the other program that you do on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, actually, it's not on Blog Talk Radio. It's on the All Digital Radio Network.
Oh, that's right. Well, that's okay.
Yes,
too.
But it is. It's in talk format. It's another talk radio show, but it's horror related, and it has to do with everything horror. It's called On the Scare, And like I said, you can find it on the All Digital Radio Network. It's something that my good friend Len Barnhart and I kind of put together, and we discuss horror films, games, television shows. We've been getting a few really good guests on, so it's just a lot of fun. I get to play out my whole horror thing a little bit more often than we touch on it here.
Yeah. And you've had on some paranormal investigators, too, one of your shows I listened to.
Yeah, a couple of shows back, and they were talking about it. And I immediately thought about you and your – and I mentioned it on the show, as a matter of fact. I couldn't remember the name of your group that you were involved in, but I did mention – you know, that I had a friend that also does that sort of thing, and I just find it so fascinating.
Yeah, has it changed your mind, you know, changed your thoughts, all of it?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I try to be open-minded about a lot of things, and yet closed-minded about a lot of other things. But, you know, that's something like that with ghosts, or even Bigfoot and Nessie and anything that has to do with the paranormal in general, I cannot completely say no, that never happens or that can't happen. I mean, there might be some scientific explanations, but then there's other things that just, it's unexplainable.
Sure. Yep.
So that's what makes it fun, and that's why I have to keep an open mind.
Yeah, and when you actually have an experience like I have had over the last several years that I've been doing this, you find yourself unable to dismiss some of these things that are happening. And when you're a skeptic like I am, you're at battle with yourself because you're saying, there's no way that could possibly happen. That can't be what I heard. That can't be possible. It has to be something else. Like the EVP that we uncovered the other night in an investigation. Actually, Lisa Lee had asked the entity if they had been to heaven, and we got an immediate response. Once again, this is after we were all silent, and we played back the EVP, and we heard yes. So that was pretty striking when you hear that. And you try to dismiss it, you try to debunk it, as it's called, but sometimes you're unable to do that. And when you're unable to do that, you have to consider the possibility that what we're investigating here is an actual spirit or entity. And so it's a lot of fun, and it does change sometimes, and it has for me, it really has. It's changed my whole outlook on life and what comes after this life. So it's interesting, and it's a lot of fun getting together with friends to going out and doing these things, especially around Halloween time, like we're getting close to.
Yes, which is coming, my favorite holiday.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I think we should get on with the main event tonight, and that would be introducing Trent Sklina. He'll be here in a couple of minutes after I talk a little bit about his book that he wrote. And the book is called The Price of Power. It was written by Trent Sklina and published by Author House in 2012. And you may purchase it at Amazon.com Kindle. And this is what Amazon had to say about the book. Michael Stratford has no idea that on that stormy day in October, he would meet a girl that will change his life forever and plug him into an alternate world where he must struggle to survive and ultimately find her again. And this is what I wrote on my blog in my review. Michael and Heather seem like your normal run-of-the-mill high school teenagers from the 1970s, but there's something very special about these two, and there's a lot more happening with them than just the passionate love that they have for each other. Heather has an unusual power within her, and she uses it to her advantage and for her protection, until her malevolent uncle begins to control her with some magical powers of his own. Michael gets caught up in his love for Heather, and because of it, he too is a target of some of the very dark magic and ultimately finds himself in another very strange world, the same world where Heather has gone to. The story starts out in the 1970s where Heather and Michael meet. It's a flashback in time to big cars, VHS tapes, phones with cords on them, beer parties, and the timelessness of first dates and all that comes with falling deeply in love for the first time. The author uses those puppy love infatuations, which we all can relate to push the story along. Mix in a little of the supernatural, and the story is further enhanced, and you will soon find yourself caught up in the lives of the two main characters as they try to go about their normal lives until the magic happens. This was a good read. The story is a long one, so throw another log on the fire and settle in for a late night tale that will prepare you for Halloween. And with that, well, we will bring in, by pushing the magic button, or as he relates in the stories, we'll go through
conjuring
a portal.
Conjuring him.
Yes, we're going through a portal now to Trent Sklina. And Trent, have we reached you?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, cool. There you are. So how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm really excited. This is a first for me.
Very good. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from my home in Hanover Park, Illinois.
Oh, okay. I had some idea that you were on the West Coast, but I don't know how I got that idea, but
I'm a Midwesterner.
Yep.
Been here most of my life.
Yeah, so you're not too far from me. In fact, a lot of our authors are a lot further from me than you are, so maybe we can meet up at some point here in the future.
Well, that would be nice. That'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be. Okay, Trent, I love The Price of Power, and could you read an excerpt from your book?
Well, you know, I got a portion picked out. Heather opened her eyes and looked up at a clear blue sky. She could remember pain. She remembered being punched in the face and falling to the ground and the glint of the straight razor blade as it came at her. She could remember watching Abraham's head explode in a shower of crimson gore, the wind howling like a hurricane around her, and then a feeling of something like getting squeezed through a funnel while being turned inside out. Above her, only a few small clouds, just wisps of moisture, really high up, wafted by on their way on the warm and gentle breeze. A warm and gentle breeze. How could that be? It was December. If she was outside, she would be frozen stiff and covered in snow. Overhead, the clouds chased each other across the unbroken blue of the sky, unconcerned with the puzzled mind of a teenage girl. Heather sat up, apparently far too fast for her present condition. Her head felt like it suddenly exploded and her vision swam. Every part of her body ached and protested. She dropped back slowly on the warm, smooth surface she was lying on, closed her eyes, and was still. Long minutes passed, and the spinning and nausea faded. Heather opened her eyes again. There was still a blue sky above her, and a warm breeze caressing her bare skin. The tatters of cloth that she had left hardly offered up any protection to the open elements at all. Her nightcare had been reduced to rags, and the rest of her clothes Abraham had stripped from her by her... Oops. I was getting ahead of myself. Abraham stripped from her in her struggle. Her mind shifted quickly away from the anguish of that memory. She wasn't going to let the darkness get her, swallow her up. She had paid her uncle back for that pain. She had earned her freedom from the humiliation with Abraham's blood. She focused on that now. She focused on the reality she found herself in.
Very, very, very good, Trent. And Robin, after hearing that, any questions for Trent?
I'm just very, very, it's just interesting. The story, I assume, like, several of your characters, they have magical powers. They travel back in time. That's the deal with the story?
It's not actually time travel. It's interdimensional. It's between two
parallel
universes.
Interdimensional travel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's It's magic portals between two worlds that are very similar.
Well, how do you feel about things like that, witchcraft, magical spells, and stuff in the real world?
Oh, I don't know. I've seen some weird stuff in my time. When I was a teenager, I saw some strange things, and magic, you know, it's a possibility. Witchcraft is more like a religion, really, but, you know, magic, it's a possibility. It could exist.
I found it interesting that much of the story takes place back in the 1970s. We were talking about time travel. Like Trent had said, it's more interdimensional than traveling through time. But can you tell us the process for a writer like you to be able to go back in time? I mean, in order to research the 1970s, what did you have to do?
Well, actually, I grew up in the 1970s. I was a teenager. So really the core of Michael is based sort of on me and how I was as a teenager and how I was with my friends back then and the things we did. I mean, that's, you know, it's the 70s really stuck with me.
Yeah, I guess I think Robin and I can relate, Trent. So I think we're all together in a group here. So
yeah,
I was born in the 1960s. So you know, I was a teenager in the late 70s, and it's a lot of it's based on, you know, my real experiences as a teenager. Like Conant was actually the school that I went to, and I lived in Hoffman Estates. So I mean, for a lot of this was like, you know, just remembering what I'd been through and then putting a twist on things.
In fact, what I really liked about your story was in the beginning when you talked about it being a real story, and we're not going to think about that too much or question you too much about the reality of it. August.
Oh, the prologue.
Magic can happen and it could be real, but when I heard you talking about those places in Illinois, I actually went online and I researched and I looked up the high school that you were talking about and found that it was a real high school. So that was interesting to actually look and see where the story is taking place in the beginning, of course, and then it takes off and takes us into a different world. But that was fun. I liked how you did that.
Yeah, well, thank you. That was kind of actually the genesis of the book, how I started it off. I had that whole first part up to the, you know, the events with that all culminate with Abraham and that stuff. I had that written for a long time, and it took me a while to figure out, you know, where do I go from there? I'm going to have them go somewhere else, so where am I going to have it go? And it just, I'm an Anglophile, I think. I've always liked English humor and British stuff, so I thought, hey, why not that, you know?
Yeah.
Let's make a twist on the American, you know, being the big, huge power in the world.
Yeah, that was good. Cool. What prompted you to become a writer, and how did you get the idea for The Price of Power?
Oh, I've always been a writer. I've been writing short stories and just scribbling stuff since I was a kid. So my grandma said I used to sit at the table and scribble on a piece of paper and go, "What does that say? What does that say?" And The Price of Power. I just had this, you know, I'd had a relationship with a girl that I thought was very serious, and, you know, it ended in heartbreak. And I used that as the core to start writing the story. And then I just went off because I've always been into science fiction, and I love that stuff. So, I turned it into a big science fiction story.
You said that you've been writing it for a while. When did you start writing it?
Oh, geez. I started with the first versions, my gosh, 25 years ago.
Yeah. Hey, don't feel bad. I've been writing mine going on 7 years now.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought I was bad.
You know, I would write.
Yeah.
I would write myself into a corner, and I'd have to start again. And I thank God for word processors, because I used to scribble in notebooks. And I'm left-handed, too. So, you know, left-handed writing in a notebook, my whole hand was just covered in ink all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's interesting. And the other thing I found interesting about your book, and this is your first one, Trent, is the length of it. This is a very long story. And I'm just wondering, how did you decide on the length of the story, and how long did it take for you to write it? You just alluded to a little bit of that, but why so long for your first book?
Well, how long is it, first of all?
It's 600 and something pages, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 600, and let's see, even with the epilogue, we're talking 642 pages.
Wow.
Well, that's actually a bit of that is because I had it done in bigger print. Easier to read print when I had it done, which made it a larger book. But I had actually started out, and as part of my process for writing, I like to write the core of the action. So my first stuff is really kind of dry, and it's just the center of the story. And then I'll go back and I get ideas about, oh, well, let's do this with this character, or relate this with that, or, you know, put this in, and you build around it, and it adds to the length. I mean, I think the original, when I had it actually done as a story, it was only about 300 pages. And then I went and I folded it in and I added all the stuff in to make it longer.
Yeah, even so, at 300 pages, that's your average novel. And then, you know, and you're saying you did a larger font to make it easier reading, and so that kind of spread it out to be 600 plus pages. But the reality is, I mean, unless you've doubled the size of the font, it's still, if you had it in, let's say, the normal 12-point font, it's still got to be up there. Five and change pages,
at least. There's a lot of, I got a lot of ideas, as you know, I say, after I had the core written. I had a lot of ideas about, and it was also, it's setting up, because this is not the only book. This is, I mean, it's a standalone story as it is, but it's not the only book, because I've envisioned a trilogy.
Wow.
And I've actually got a good portion, probably half of the second book written.
Wow.
Wow.
The scope of this is really epic. Sounds like it anyway.
Yeah, it gets pretty wild. The second one's more of sci-fi. It deals more with, there's more technology and stuff in it.
Trent, getting back to the length of the book, how many words is it?
Oh, geez, you know, I don't know offhand.
Okay. I'm just curious, at some point, send me an email, let me know how many words it is. I'm just curious because I'm writing a novel myself, which is kind of stretching out to be a long novel, and I'm a little concerned about that because of the price that they charge you when you go to buy it, and being a new author, sometimes people aren't going to want to divvy up $30 to buy a new author's book. I'm talking about the hard copy here.
Yeah, the hard copy is definitely expensive. The e-book turned out to be real affordable, though.
Yes. And I think that's where the majority of your readers will come from. Unfortunately, once again, when we write long stories, that's the downside of it. But as I was reading your book, I found myself caught up to the point where I didn't no longer mind if it's so long. At first, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, that's an awful lot to write, and it's an awful lot to read, and is it going to hold my attention? And that was one of the factors in giving it such a high mark, a high star rating, which I gave it a 4. was because it did hold my attention and it did keep me interested in the story. So that kudos for you. But I'm also interested, Trent, how'd you go about mm-hmm. developing your main characters, Michael and Heather? I know you just talked about Michael being a big part of you, but who is Heather? Was this the other girl that kind of broke your heart?
Well, actually, I based her physical characteristics on her, but the person I just kind of made up because she wasn't anything like that.
Okay.
Heather is just Heather. I just kind of made up, so it's sort of like I don't know. It was real hard for me to write for women. That was my biggest problem, is writing for a girl. You know, it's like, I'm a guy. Mm-hmm. I don't pretend to understand women.
Please don't.
Yeah, you did a good job, Brent, with that.
I just thought of her as someone, you know, who had survived some bad things in her life and, mm-hmm. and found a strength through that. And mm-hmm. was able to stand up when she needed to and defend herself, you know.
Yeah, good. Well, I have a question. I know you said it took you, I guess, a span of 25 years to write this first book, and you just said that you're working on the second. And I certainly hope it doesn't take another 25 years. I doubt it.
No, actually, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you, like, do you have a specific place and a process that you have to writing it? Do you need to get into a mood? You know, I mean, because I'm a terrible procrastinator, as I've mentioned before, with my writing, and I recently interviewed a friend of mine that we've also interviewed on the show prior, Eric Shellman, and he was explaining how his process is and how he dedicates it, just like time to it, like it's a job and all that. So I know everybody has a process, and so what is yours to getting this next book out in a timely manner, because now that you have the first one out, of course people are going to be looking forward to the sequel. So do you have a special place that you go to, and how do you get in the mood?
I'm always mulling this stuff over in the back of my mind, mm-hmm. different bits and pieces of it. Sitting down to type it, to actually write it down, I do have to be in the mood, because I have like probably a couple hundred pages worth of stuff written that mm-hmm. for the second book that I have to, you know, whip into shape. I mean, it's like you say, it's the core idea of the book, but mm-hmm. having, you know, finished the first one, and then there's certain ideas that carry over and characters, and to sit down and then beat it all. And I got to be in the mood to sit at the computer and do it and,
well,
you know,
I mean, how do you
pages.
Get in the mood? Do you listen? Do you have music? Do you listen to? Is there, I don't know, food that you eat? I don't.
No, I usually
the first book takes place in the 70s. So, are you listening to Skinner? What's going on?
No, actually, it was Disturbed. I was listening to Disturbed. No, I usually I'm sitting on the couch and the TV's on. And, uh-huh. and I start typing away. And if I get in the mood, I'm at it for a while. But it's just one of those things, got to be in the mood to do it. I haven't actually touched my computer in a while now. Things going through my head, I got ideas for it, but I got to sit down and doing the typing, the actual editing to make it all smooth out is mm-hmm. the hard part.
Yeah.
Do you write like a stream of consciousness, or do you outline? You know what I'm saying? Like when you write,
like a stream, Yeah, yeah. Especially if I got mm-hmm. like if I get an image in my head of something, and I get the description. Otherwise, it's usually just like a core of action, and there's not a lot of description mm-hmm. to it. And then I'll fill it out from there, you know. because later on stuff will occur. Oh, you know, hey, that would be perfect. Like the whole thing with the prologue and the epilogue that you referred to, that I had that written different ways, and then one night it just popped into my head. Oh, well, duh. And to me, it's like a perfect little, oh, this is a real story thing, you know?
Yeah, and I was wondering too, Trent, is there anything about that story that you would go back and change? I know a lot of us writers, after we put our babies out there, we would like to go and change something about it. What would you change about the first story, if anything?
I don't know. Honestly, I'm happy with the way it came out. I thought it was all cohesive for me. I like the way the characters come out, and I like the way it ended. I wouldn't have gone through with the publishing.
Yeah. And what about the publishing?
Yep, that's fair.
What about the editing and the publishing? How did that work out for you?
Well, I did all the editing myself. The Author House is an indie publisher, so it's you purchase a package and publish your book, and so I ended up the thing I loved about that was, you know, I got to design the cover. I did all the artwork on the cover myself.
Oh, very good.
I got to edit the story, so it was my story. It wasn't somebody else's, you know, version of it. Because I had offered it up to a couple of different places, and they sent back, like, their synopsis. And it was like the person didn't even read my book, so.
Right.
Yeah, I find that
really interesting, because a lot of our authors have come on our show, well, now for 55 times here we've done it. This show here, and a lot of them have gone to editors and, you know, paid hefty fees to have an editor their story. And I can't think of anybody who has actually taken on that task themselves right off the top of my head, except for me. But I actually did have help from my wife at the time, and she helped me with my work. So I find it fascinating that you did that, because when I was reading it, I was thinking, because of the length of your story, I was thinking about, boy, this must have been one hell of an edit job that they had to do with that many pages there. But you shined, I thought. I thought the editing, you know, was done very well. I don't really pay a lot of attention to grammar when I read. I read more for the story. That's how I review. So, but I didn't pick up any mistakes.
Well, it was interesting that when I used Word to write it, and a lot of times it didn't like some of my syntax, you know, the way I would lay out a short little sentence. But I do
that.
You get
a little blue squiggly line.
Yeah, you know, it tells you, no, that's not quite a sentence. And I'm like, but that is a sentence, because it's for me, it's like an action. It gives a tension to what's there. And
I love
and
this
that's
guy,
because
I argue with Word, too.
Yeah,
I have
the English
same
language is a living
program.
Thing, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I love spell check, because I'm terrible at spelling. I could spell the same word three different ways in the same sentence.
I have fun with a thesaurus.
Yeah.
16 different ways to say the same thing.
So, did you
write yourself too?
Trent, after you got this book
self-publishing
done...
Self-publishing is a lot of work, so, you know, I have to say,
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I did have a couple of good friends who read it over for me. My friend Bob and my friend Tina, they pored over it, and, you know, they helped me with it, and they encouraged me, because there's a couple times I was just going to give up on it. And so I have to thank them
for
helping me.
Yay for Bob and Tina.
Yes. Good friends are always good to have.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got the writer's lounge behind you, Trent.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed this. This has been nice talking with you guys.
Yeah, and it's not over
yet.
Yeah,
we always have a lot of fun. Yeah, don't go away.
Don't go away. You still got a few more minutes here. But any advice that you'd like to give to other aspiring writers and authors?
Oh, yeah, just do it. Just write.
Uh-huh.
If you enjoy writing, just keep writing, you know. Not everything pans out. I wrote 10,000 little pieces of this and that, and you know, it didn't pan out. And then you hit the one, you know, and you'll find it. So you just got to keep writing. Never give up on it.
And the next book, what's the title of that book again?
The Ties That Bind.
The Ties That Bind. And it's a pickup with Heather and Michael?
Yes. It's a continuation of the story.
When do you expect to have that done?
I'm not sure. Like I said, it's with me, I got to be in the mood to sit down at the keyboard. And I have a lot of it written, but there's a lot of it that needs to be manipulated because I'd written it before I actually went back and put the finishing polishes on The Price of Power. So I have to go back in and I have to, there's like whole chapters I'm going to either have to delete or go through and change things, little things here and there to make it all fit and all be, you know, in the same line.
Yeah.
Now, you touched on the publisher a little bit here, but as I read here, I see that the name of the publisher is Author House, and you were talking a little bit about the package that they gave you. Did they do anything to encourage you to change anything about your story, or did they give you any kind of, I guess I'm asking the same thing that I was wondering about myself when I published my memoir, is that I went through Lulu.com, and basically that's a self-published publishing house, so they don't really have any input into your story at all. Is Author House the same way?
Yeah, they don't really try to tell you what to do with your story. They do have you can purchase editing. They will have a professional editor go over it for you. It's just really neat. They've got all sorts of little like promotional things they can do. Like they have a book to movie process that you can get through them, where they will have a professional who makes scripts and looks at books. For a lot of production companies, they'll go over it and see if it's doable as a movie, and then write up something that can be offered out to different production companies, which is something I was considering with this book because I thought it'd make a good movie.
Yeah, I think it would actually. It would make a very good movie. And I forgot to mention at the top of the show, folks, if you'd like to give a call here at the Writer's Lounge and talk to Robin, me, and Trent, you can do that at 626-213-5613. And we have a toll-free number at 877-878-1436. So don't be shy. Get on the phone, and I'm sure we'd love to hear from you. We've got about another 13 minutes here left with you, Trent. And I'd like to ask you what we always ask authors on the Writer's Lounge is, if you could sit down and talk with a famous person, who would it be, and what would be the first question that you would ask them?
There's so many different people. It's a hard question.
Yeah.
There's just so many different famous people, you know. It's like,
who's your favorite author?
My favorite author, Stephen R. Donaldson.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever read any of his stuff. He wrote the Thomas Covenant books. And that was an inspiration for me. I read his first book back in 78.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, oh, my Lord. When I read his stuff, I can see what he's writing about.
Isn't that great?
So what would be the first question you'd ask him?
Um,
We're holding your hand through this.
Where do you come up with your ideas?
Right?
I mean, hey, where do you come up with these ideas?
Yeah.
Like, holy cow, it's like, because this stuff is, you know, it's similar to a lot of fiction, but it's unique. And it's like, where did you come up with those ideas? I'd love to know. I'd like to know about his process, how he goes about writing.
Yeah. And that's, I think a lot of
people. You know
what
mine is?
That.
If I could sit down and talk with a famous person, it would be John Lennon. And what I would question would be, are you the walrus or are you the Eggman?
I thought that McCartney was the walrus.
Yeah, I just wanted to know.
Yeah, Lennon would be cool.
Because the lyrics are just kind of weird, you know, in that song.
Yeah, I think that was something that they were doing at that time.
But we always have fun with that question. If you could sit down and talk with a famous person, who would it be and what would be the first question? And everybody kind of like stumbles there and I don't know, who would I talk to?
It's hard, you know, there's so many, like, you know, and actors, I'd like, you know, you want to ask them, you know, well, where do you find your inspiration? You know, Bryan Cranston. I don't know if you guys have been watching Breaking Bad at all, but Bryan Cranston, my God, what a great actor. So you want to ask him, what's your process? How do you do the character? How do you get into these characters? You know, because he's done everything from silliness. He's done everything from silliness and to dead serious. And then in this last series, he did. It's like, you know, I'd like to know how he gets into that.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, obviously, when you said Stephen there, I thought you were going to say Stephen King. There's a mind that we'd all get into. And speaking of questions,
I'd be afraid of getting into his mind.
Yeah, we do have somebody here is called into the Writer's Lounge, and we'll bring him on. They're from area code 847, and we'd like to welcome you to the Writer's Lounge and ask you, do you have any questions or comments for our special guest tonight?
Well, this is Tina calling from Schaumburg. He mentioned me. Hi, Trent.
Hi, Tina.
I don't really have a question because, you know, I've read the book and I know you, so no questions, but I'm just really proud of you. It's really good to hear you on this show. And it's just really wonderful, and I'm looking forward to that second book. So let's get on it, right?
Yes, ma'am. I'm working on it. No, I just got to thank you again because I wouldn't have got the book done without you and Bob. And you guys really helped me.
Well, because we knew it was going to make it. So we had to push you a little bit to get it done. And you got it done and you did a fabulous job.
Yeah,
it took me a while to read it. I have to admit, that's a lot of pages.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, Tina, let me ask you a question about the book and your review of it. What was your favorite part of the story? What did you enjoy the most?
Favorite part? Well, I mean, it was just the entire story just building to, and it went to places where you didn't even think it could go. And the imagination behind it, I mean, the entire book, all of it was pretty much, it was all my favorite, you know.
Aww.
It surprised me. It surprised me every time, you know, I went to the next chapter. And then, you know, it wasn't predictable. And that's what I enjoyed so much about it. It was not predictable.
It was not predictable. Yeah. And that was what made it good for you.
No, and there were a lot of sad parts, you know, and you felt the emotion of each one of these characters. You could see these characters right in front of you, and that's what, you know. So the whole story is fantastic.
How long have you known Trent?
How long have I known Trent? I don't know, at least 10 years, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. We met at a diner.
It's funny because we met through my friend Bob and her kids. And they knew each other, and then we started up having breakfast at this one place we all go to, and that's how we all got together.
Yeah, then I got divorced, and my ex-husband got custody of the diner, so
that's why it's taken so long for him to finish the second book, is because he has no place to go to get him going in the mood.
Yeah.
Gotta find a new diner.
Yeah.
Okay, Trent, Tina, is it Tina?
It is Tina, yes.
Tina, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it very much. And Trent, we're getting close here to the end, and we'd like everybody to know where they can find you on the internet. Where should they be directed to get a hold of you?
I do have a Facebook page for The Price of Power.
You do? Okay, that's good to know, because I tried to search for you and I couldn't find you on Facebook.
Yeah, actually, I did my own personal, when I set it up, I used a pseudonym when I originally set my personal one out. But I do have a Price of Power. It's The Price of Power on Facebook.
Good, good. And I hope you're getting a lot of likes, and I hope people will continue to promote you, because being a first-time author and being such a long read, it was a good read. And I was really, obviously, Tina was too, but very surprised at how it kept me going along. So we get better as we keep doing this, and I imagine that the second book will be just as good, or if not better, than your first. So we wish you a lot of luck, and we'd like to thank you for being on the Writer's Lounge with us today.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I've had a great time. It was a blast. I was nervous. You know, this is the first time I've ever done this. And it's been a lot of fun.
Until the drugs set in, because Robin and I like to joke about taking the drugs here and it relaxes you. So we were
between drugs and condoms. I don't know what it is with Tom.
Yeah. Well, we did the condoms too, but the drugs always work really well.
Man, we're gonna smack him around a bit.
So anyway,
yeah,
Trent,
I guess.
Trent, thank you so much, and best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you, Tom.
Yep, take care now.
Thanks
you
a lot.
You have a nice night. Thank you.
Bye.
It was
you
a
too.
Blast talking with you guys.
It was great.
Yep, and I just sent him through the portal there to another world. So. Trent's on his way to
zipping through the wormholes in outer space.
Yeah, that's where he's gone. And you know, Robin, I give us a little extra time near the end here so we can continue with the promotions. And I think what I did in the beginning of the program, instead of going through three of them, I actually did four of them because I am not really sure how I did that, but I have one left to do. But I have a little extra time, so I can tell everybody a little bit about the TWL book promotion. And once again, we've been on the air now for almost 2.5 years. This keeps flying by. But I want to thank once again everybody who supports the show, people like Tina for listening and for calling in. And I hope you all will continue to do that. Support our authors. Get out there and do reviews of their books. And once again, take the advice of what Trent said. If you've got a book or a story in your head, get out there and write it. And then you, too, can be on the Writer's Lounge and partake of some of the drugs that we offer, and they're good. So we have fun doing that, and we hope you will, too. A little bit more in-depth about what you need to do. What you need to do, first of all, go over to our Facebook page. And scroll down if you don't see it, but it should be there at some point. It's called TWL Book Promotion. It'll give you all the details and what you need to do. Basically, sending a JPEG to TWL11@yahoo.com. And also, of course, to keep the show running, we need the green stuff, unfortunately. We are a premier service here on Blog Talk Radio, and they keep us running because we are in the premier account, which cost us money, like everything else does these days, so it does help us to keep going, and we really appreciate that. But anyways, it'll tell you how to do that, And I'd like to get on here with the last promotion, and it's called Wicked Hunger by Del Cherie Gladden. And it's about Vanessa and Xander Roth are good at lying. They have to be when they are hiding a deadly secret. Day after day, they struggle to rein in their uncontrollable hunger for pain and suffering in order to live normal lives. Things only get worse when Ivy Gura appears with her pink-striped hair and secrets. The vicious hunger Ivy inspires is frightening, not to mention suspicious. Vanessa's instincts are rarely wrong, so when they tell her that Ivy's appearance is a sign of bad things to come, she listens. She becomes determined to expose Ivy's secrets. Vanessa tries to warn her brother, but Xander is too enamored with Ivy to pay attention to her conspiracy theories. And one of them is right about Ivy, but if they lose control of their hunger, it won't matter who is right and who is wrong. One little slip, and they'll all be dead. So that was Wicked Hunger by Del Cherie Gladden. I think she was one of our seven authors, Robin. I think she was on the show.
Yes.
A lot of these people who do get involved in the TWL book promotion are those type of authors. And we'd like to get as many people on and get as many people recognized as possible. So hopefully you will take advantage of that service that we're offering here at the Blog Talk Radio and the Writer's Lounge, and hopefully we'll hear from you. And Robin, do you have any last comments about Trent or anybody in particular as far as authors that you'd like to talk about?
I mean, I really enjoyed speaking to Trent, and congratulations to him on his first radio interview. I think that it went well, and he was a lot of fun to talk to, and the interview was really great, and we always seem to have good authors, good interviews, and we just have good people in general on our show, don't we?
We really do. Trent, I didn't mention, but Trent doesn't have a lot of reviews. If you go to his Amazon, you won't see very many there, and it's a really good book. So there's a lot of people out there, and this is another little subject that I'd like to talk about at some point in the future, but there are some of us who will author a book, but we don't actually get too involved in the internet process. In other words, promoting the book.
Yeah, the promotion.
But it doesn't mean that they're bad books. It means that you're just not into that kind of thing or that you don't put a lot of effort. I'm not saying that Trent isn't or hasn't been. I'm just making a reference to the fact that there's a lot of people out there who are writing a lot of good things, but they're not getting a lot of response. And that can be very frustrating, but it's just the kind of world we live in where you really have to involve yourself after you write to promote your book and get it out there. So anyway, Robin, we've come to the end here. And what is it that you'd like to tell everybody?
Well, you know, as always, everyone out there, we wish you good reading and good writing. Have a good night, everybody.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. God spoke to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun begins.